Next individual, please.
Item 1280, request of Joe Walsh to address council regarding communication.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I would ask a little patience. I'm having a lot of trouble with my throat. Good morning. I am Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. And we take no money from this body or other government bodies. We think you should require all people that represent nonprofits to make that statement or explain how much they do take from you so we know what's what and what the agenda is. So our agenda may be hostile, but it's honest. No money involved. We come today to talk about the abuse of office and not telling the truth. We have been criticized by Commissioner Udaly as being unprepared when coming before this council. We strongly disagree. Time remaining does not allow us to list all of the suggestions that we have offered, but here's just a few. For the cold weather, we asked the mayor on a number of occasions to get warming buses to put outside this building. If you had two warming buses out there, you could probably seat, 100 people? I don't think that would happen. But the really neat thing about warming buses is you can move them. So if the first couple of times you don't get a lot of people, you might pick another spot, like the county building. Those buildings, these two buildings that I'm talking about, are centrally located on the east side and the west side, and people know where they are. We suggested that, and that was rejected over and over again. It's amazing. When I talk to people about that, they say, that's a good idea. So simple. Hey, TriMet, how about putting a couple of buses over here? Have the police and fire department make up a current list of where people can go to get warm. We had problems on the street last year where the cops wouldn't get out of their damn cars. Not only did they not have a list, and they weren't helping people, but when the cameras were there, they were sure out of their cars. And they had really good stuff in the back. Photo ops. Attending city council meetings, we suggested that you extend the time to sign up. And Mary, who is here today, who Mary and I disagree on a lot of stuff, but she suggested a really neat thing. How about just expanding it to 10 people? 30 minutes, that's all we're asking the citizens. So you say you can't say to us, hey, you're not giving us any suggestions. Because I could go on for a half hour. But I would go to jail. Because Republicans send people to jail, Mayor. And you are a Republican, right?
That's not correct.
I know. You changed it to Democrat to win this office, but you were a Republican. Is that correct?
I was.
Once a Republican, always a Republican, and you act like a Republican.
Right. Thanks, Mr.
Why don't you meet with us and ask us for some more suggestions? You did it twice, and then you ran away.
Mr. Walsh.
And hid in the closet.
Mr. Walsh.
Yes.
You've made your point. I got your email. Thank you.
You really did.
I did. I read it.
You were in Chicago.
I was in Chicago, but they have email there, too. All right, thanks. So let me please respond to a couple of the points you've made, because you've made some good ones. You've made some I don't agree with, but you've made some good ones. First of all, with regard to the warming buses, last year we did, in fact, have an agreement with TriMet that if the warming buses were needed as a result of us not being able to get shelter space online, they would be provided. Four did, and that's four. Excuse me. Can I please respond? I listened to you. Now let me. I'm not bullshitting you. Yes, I'm just responding. So, second of all, if anybody, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me. Last year, Mr. Walsh, please sit down. I'm trying to respond and you're not letting me, so please sit down. You're done. Next item, please.
Item 1281, request of Neil H. Walker to address council regarding Portland police idea about sidewalk safety.
Thank you. And while he is coming up, I will remind people we have a no-turn-away policy during severe weather issues. That was true last year. It will be true this year. If you come across somebody who is outside during a severe weather incident, call 911. Please stay with them. If they are not, if it is not a severe situation, but they are cold and they would like to come inside, call 211. 211. Excuse me. During a severe, Mr. Walsh, please let me finish. All right. I listen to you now. Listen to me. If you don't stop, I'm going to ask you to leave. Any rate, for the rest of the people who actually do want to hear this information, if you want to know where the shelters are that are available, call 211. They have a will have a complete list during severe weather situations. If there is somebody who needs to be checked up on, please call the non-emergency police number. That's 503-823-3333. And again, this year we will have the same policy. And we'll just take a moment while Mr. Walsh calms himself down. Mr. Walsh, we want you to be able to stay, so please. We want you to be able to stay. Next individual, please.
He does not appear to be here. Mr.
I'm sorry.
Walker?
Is Mr. Walker here? If he's prepared to listen, yeah, absolutely, he can stay. But if he's not going to listen, he can't.
If he's
okay, great. Item 1282. We don't have enough people for the consent. 1282, please.
Mm-hmm. 1282. Adopt the allocation methodology for the local transportation infrastructure charge. Establish a maximum fee. Amend charge required code and direct staff to develop additional components of neighborhood streets program.
Very good. Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. With Portland growing by leaps and bounds and the pace of infill development on unimproved streets increasing, it was clear to transportation staff and the past city council that policies around building complete and connected improvements were not keeping up. For perspective, 50 miles of Portland's streets are dirt and gravel, and another 200 miles are underimproved streets. And these problem streets are located across the city. So this is not an east side or a west side problem. It is a Portland problem and something that needs to be addressed. To that end, the city council adopted a local transportation infrastructure charge, or LTIC, in April of 2016 and directed staff to come back to council with a methodology on how to spend those funds. In the subsequent year and a half, it became clear that the real-world situations were making the LTIC unreasonable in certain situations, and therefore some type of cap or maximum charge was needed. Therefore, council is being asked to consider three things this morning. The first is to adopt a maximum charge for the local transportation infrastructure charge. The second is to adopt a methodology for the LTIC. And the third is to direct staff to continue to develop the neighborhood streets network, streets framework. So it's important that we take time to review the effectiveness and rationality of the proposal. And over the past 18 months, transportation staff have been doing exactly that and are now before us with an updated rate and methodology for our consideration. Staff will give us a short presentation, and it is a bit dense, but I feel it is appropriate as it is such an important program, and interested members of the public should understand all the thinking and analysis that went into the proposal. And following that, we'll open it up for testimony, and I would also, so I'll turn it over now to Ann Hill and Kurt Kruger, who will make the presentation, but I also wanted to move an amendment that will provide an exemption for affordable housing. This was something we intended to do, but somehow got left out of the mix, so I would now move that amendment.
Commissioner, can we suspend the rules for a second? I apologize for being late. I had a doctor's appointment. I walked in with some people who are here for the consent agenda, Mayor. I understand this will be about an hour, hour and a half. Could we suspend the rules and do the consent agenda adoption just so they can be excused?
Any objections? Hearing none, please call the roll. First of all, are there any items pulled from the consent agenda?
I have no requests.
Call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Consent agenda is adopted.
Thank you,
Sorry.
Ma'am.
Again, I'll turn it over to Ann Hill and Kurt Kruger for the staff presentation.
So I'll second your amendment for the purpose of putting this on the table.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, Mayor Wheeler, and the rest of City Council. We have a comprehensive presentation for you today on this important issue. My name is Ann Hill, and I work for the Portland Bureau of Transportation as a program manager in the Development, Permitting, and Transit section. Today, I will provide some background, review the LTIC collections and maximum proposal, provide findings from our public outreach that inform the allocation methodology and additional neighborhood street framework elements. I will then close the presentation and open it up for questions. So how big is this problem? This map right here that you have on your screen shows the red are those street segments that are LTIC eligible, meaning this is where the charge occurs. It has been decades in the making, resulting from annexation. Large portions of the city were built many decades ago when local street standards may have been different and when most of these areas were unincorporated county land where street standards were very different. As the land was annexed into the city, these rural county roads were now inside city limits, but with no decision on if they should be improved and who should pay for those improvements. There has been a longstanding policy that frontage improvements are the responsibility of property owners. This has resulted in a development-driven process where new development must build their own street improvements consistent with city code. This development-driven nature of the city code did not align well with infill development. Many developers said that it didn't make sense for them to build a 30 or 50-foot long segment of road or sidewalk in the middle of a paved or gravel street. In certain situations, the city agreed with the developers. While Portland has had these 250 miles of unimproved residential side streets for decades, there has always been a desire to see these streets improved, but the city has historically not allocated significant resources to these projects. That's because the cost of the city's backlog of transportation projects is far greater than our available transportation funding. This requires the city to prioritize transportation investments, and the city has done so with grants and opportunities that prioritize projects that carry more people, shift modes, and achieve the goals of Vision Zero. The LTIC was developed to specifically address one aspect of the city's problem with unimproved residential side streets: the fact that infill development was occurring throughout the city and in many situations was not contributing anything to solve the city's infrastructure problem other than signing waivers of remonstrance. The LTIC guaranteed that all new development would contribute to solving the problem through paying a fee unless frontage improvements were made on site. The LTIC is not an in lieu of fee, it's not a tax, and it's not an SDC. Instead, the LTIC is a transaction fee. Applied to single dwelling zones on local service streets, the charge of $600 per linear foot based on the total linear footage frontage of the property adjacent to the local service traffic street. ADUs, disaster replacement, alterations, and property line adjustments are exempt. And we have, as Commissioner Saltzman introduced, we are including affordable housing to the list of exemptions in this code update. So how much have we collected? So since July of 2016, we've collected, this map shows 1.8 million has been collected since July. And as of this morning, 2.2 million has been collected, which is an average of about $122,000 a month. The estimated cost to improve all 250 miles of unimproved local residential streets is $1.5 billion. That calculates to $6.3 million per mile. Thus, the LTIC revenue by itself will only be sufficient to address a very small fraction of the city's unimproved local service streets. When the city adopted the LTIC, the City Council directed that all LTIC revenue be held in a lockbox until the Council approved the allocation methodology to specify how decisions will be made on the expenditures of the LTIC. And that's why we're here today. So before I talk about the allocation methodology, I do want to touch upon the LTIC maximum that we're proposing today. Based upon a comprehensive review of building permits subject to the LTIC, PBOT found the LTIC to pose a financial impediment to residential development for a small subset of properties with abnormally large frontages on unimproved streets, especially corner lots. The LTIC maximum establishes zone specific per lot maximum numbers to the LTIC. While it is anticipated that revenue could be impacted by approximately 25%, because many projects are currently on hold resulting from this fee, we anticipate some of those projects being implemented, thereby neutralizing the impact of this maximum. Upon your approval, beginning in January 2018, the LTIC maximum would be, as we show on this chart, there would be no maximum in R2.5. R5 would be $30,000.
So for people watching this who aren't necessarily down with the lingo, could you just add one more sentence and explain what the difference is between these zones so people understand?
Sure, and I'm going to defer. That's why my friend Kurt is here who does development permitting so that he can put this translate.
Good morning. Kurt Kruger with the Office of Transportation. Thank you, Mayor. An R5 lot is roughly an inner east R5, 5,000 square foot single family dwelling lot. R7 is roughly a 7,000 square foot. Likewise, an R10 is a 10,000 square foot. And then we have a few R20 and RF, which are much larger. But again, these are all single family dwelling parcels.
Great. Thank you.
So next. So the now we're going to switch gears a little bit to the public outreach and the engagement. So moving on from the maximum, I'm going to touch on what we've been doing with public outreach, the process, and our results. As I said, with only LTIC funds, we could only improve approximately a quarter mile of a street each year citywide. And even if we just did sidewalk improvements, say pedestrian improvements, again, we wouldn't be able to make much of an impact when we're looking at 250 miles of streets needing to be improved. So with so many streets and such limited resources, the team completed a year-long public involvement process to better understand what Portlanders think about residential unimproved streets and how best to improve them. The results of this extensive public involvement process underpin the recommendations for the allocation methodology in front of you today and the Neighborhood Streets Framework. The team set out to involve the community in developing a program with goals for a process to be equitable, transparent, defensible, and values-based. Furthermore, the involvement process centered on providing access to decision-making by directly engaging persons with disabilities, communities of color, and those who speak other languages than English. So as you can see on the slide, or for those of you who are not looking at the actual presentation, we not only did we do the traditional outreach of neighborhood meetings, coalition meetings, appearing at modal committee meetings and stakeholder groups, we also engaged 30,000 individuals using Facebook with our survey. We mailed to all 28,000 residents that live on these unimproved streets, inviting them to focus groups where we had people sit in groups of 12 so that we could ask questions to them and get their feedback. We got an additional 3,000 community survey participants, including translating the survey into five different languages. We did brief, this number says 17 briefings to neighborhood coalitions, associations, and stakeholder groups. That number is actually, I think, 20. In the month of October, we did do a final round to key coalitions, the Development Review Advisory Committee, the Bureau Budget Advisory Committee of PBOT, and we also presented to the Portland Disability Commission. And then we also had 131 participants in the focus groups. So through these objectives, we engaged thousands of Portlanders coming from many backgrounds and varied perspectives. The proposed program is a direct reflection of the community's values, concerns, and priorities.
So how long has this proposal been out for public review?
The proposal has been out since September.
This version of it?
Yeah.
So that's what everybody reviewed when they went to the meetings?
Mm-hmm. Right. And we've been, the allocation methodology has been a three-step methodology, which you'll see, which we've been showing people since actually June.
So then how did their turning up at the meetings make any difference if it's the same proposal that was on the table in September?
People asked questions depending on the neighborhoods. I mean, when we get into the allocation methodology, we can talk a little bit about that. I think the biggest impact was how we looked at the framework for the additional neighborhood streets program elements. Because there's not enough money to really make a substantial impact in any of these neighborhoods, we do have a proposal here for the council to direct PBOT to look at, for example, how we can maintain the 50 miles of gravel streets, how we can continue to look at neighborhood collectors to provide sidewalk pedestrian improvements, how we can make the LIDs something that would be more accessible to Portlanders. So those proposals really came out of the feedback that we got from
the residents.
In terms of the
proposal on the table, mm-hmm. no changes based on what's been discussed in the community?
No. But quite honestly, we didn't. I mean, the suggestions we got were keep the money in the geographic areas. So that was one proposal we've gotten. The other one was spend the money on collectors. That was the second one. And the third one that we've heard is make sure that we're making pedestrian improvements. So we're using alternative street standards to encourage pedestrian improvements. We haven't said that you can't do neighborhood collectors in the allocation methodology, but we also know that we need to put more money towards that program itself. And in terms of the geographic allocation, the way that the money was collected, that wasn't something that was prescribed. But in the end, the way that we have allocated our proposal for 2018 would actually allocate the money geographically. So we have met the feedback that we've heard.
Okay, thank you.
So this is a little bit about what we've heard on the slide. We've heard that local streets provide citywide benefits, that the city should pay, not homeowners. We heard actually that stormwater is the number one priority for these streets. Second is streetlights. So sidewalks was not in the top two. It was a priority, but not the number one. We must protect low and fixed income households. When we look at how we're going to both allocate the funds, we have to support alternate street standards. So that's
can we pause there for a second?
Sure.
I just want to know, will you be in your presentation responding to the letter we got from the Office of Equity and the Ombudsman?
That was in direct response to the LTIC maximum, which I just covered. If we like to talk about that more, we are.
Well, so at some point, I mean, I'll ask you at the appropriate time,
sure.
just to summarize the concerns that were raised,
mm-hmm.
and then how this proposal addresses those concerns, including the hardship waiver.
Sure. So, Kurt, I'm going to defer to Kurt to answer those questions because I know that gets technical in terms of the administrative.
And I don't want to screw up your presentation.
Okay.
So I just want to know at some point that will be addressed and you'll give us a response.
Sure. Absolutely. So I'm just going to quickly complete this slide here. So we wanted to prioritize those underserved communities where we historically have not made the investments necessary. We need to focus on safety and traffic calming. So Commissioner Fritz, that was another thing we consistently heard of, was that if we're going to improve these streets, we need to make sure there's traffic calming elements on all of these street improvements. And we need to invest in the existing dirt and gravel roads. So today, we are asking support, again, for three different pieces. One is the LTIC maximum. It's what Commissioner Fish just asked about. The second is the allocation methodology for the funds themselves. And then we staff are adding the neighborhood street framework, which I'll talk about in a bit. So if we start with the neighborhood streets framework here to just sort of ground what we're going to be talking about for the rest of the presentation, we really have four elements which we think will cohesively address the 250 miles of streets. The first, of course, is the blue area, which I'm going to talk about. That's the LTIC financed improvements or the allocation methodology. The second one, if we go clockwise, is an ongoing maintenance program for grade and gravel streets. The third one is to really focus on the neighborhood collector pedestrian improvements. And finally, the residential LID enhancements, which I'll talk about. So if we begin with the LTIC financed improvements, as we developed the allocation strategy, the team used the outreach process to answer a series of questions on your screens related to finance and budgeting, what types of streets they wanted to live on, so pedestrian treatments, traffic calming, and how to select the projects themselves. Their feedback was used to develop a set of clear and equitable principles to guide future decisions on funding allocations, street standards, along with the allocation methodology for the project selection. So quickly, I just want to touch on the financing and then also the street standards before we dig into the allocation methodology. So beginning with financing and budgeting, in recognition of the magnitude of stormwater volume that originates from streets, the portion of capital costs for local street improvements related to stormwater management and the limited availability of these LTIC funding relative to the total costs of improving Portland's unimproved local street network, the Bureau of Environmental Services, or BES, is partnering with PBOT on LTIC-funded projects. Any BES funding contributions would be directed towards stormwater system benefits. This partnership will include a finance structure that will accelerate project timing and provide long-term program certainty and will not require property owner contributions. By partnering with BES, combining resources citywide rather than geographically segregating pots of money, the city may be able to improve 1.5 to 3 miles of streets every 10 years. So the current proposal would be once the allocation methodology is approved, BES and PBOT and OMF would come up with, we would select the projects, PBOT and BES, and then return to the neighborhoods affected to make sure that those were the best use of funds. We would then select the best financing option. What we're currently looking at is potentially looking at a bond, so $10 million worth of improvements that we would use the LTIC and the BES revenues to pay off. Once it was paid off, we would then select another round of projects and finance those. That way we could get $10 million worth of projects out the door instead of waiting for this money to slowly collect. That proposal, though, to come back, we would, of course, come back to council with that bonding proposal in the future. So we're not going to talk much today about that piece. The second piece that we did talk about with the community was the types of streets that the city would complete. So since council has adopted alternate transportation and stormwater standards to be used on select streets and community feedback supported a desired flexibility when addressing safety, mobility, and feasibility, the LTIC-funded projects will use a standard strategy adopted from the Tryon-Stevens neighborhood plan to match the best option to the street segment being reviewed. After all, not every street needs two sidewalks, and a traditional street standard, however, stormwater and traffic calming elements are the priority. Now, note that this is only the first page of a two-page flowchart that you see in front of you, where the second page determines what stormwater conveyance methods should be used for each street. And finally, with the financing model and street standards matrix in place, the third leg was the design of the allocation methodology for project selection. So this approach is proactive allowing the city to identify and implement where those high priority improvements should be. The methodology is intended to be repeatable, anticipating recurring rounds of capital investments in future years as funding is available. This methodology will stay consistent with the city's equity goals, ADA requirements, and adopted neighborhood transportation and stormwater plans. It responds to public input, seeks to leverage other available funding sources, and uses the best available data and methods for identifying high-priority transportation and stormwater improvements. Again, once the methodology is applied, PBOT and BES will identify where within the LTIC fund budget to fund missing links in connectivity to enhance the other capital projects occurring in targeted areas to be considered, such as greenways or safe routes to school investments. The LTIC allocation methodology establishes three fundamental criteria to determine a short list of the highest priority unimproved local residential projects to be funded. The first criteria is equity. To prioritize improvements in areas with high concentrations of underserved populations to ensure that everyone has access to opportunities necessary to satisfy their essential needs, advance their well-being, and achieve their full potential. Portlanders supported prioritizing projects in underserved communities. This was reinforced by results of the online community survey and was especially true for Portlanders who responded to the survey in language other than English. The second criteria
is... Before
you
move on, Kev, I just have a question. Mm-hmm. The city's racial equity policies address race and disability. Does mm-hmm. this take into account also areas where there are more people with disabilities?
So when we looked at, and I can get into how we were looking at equity for the 2018 proposed allocation, but yes, when I talked to the disability, the Commission on Disability, we did discuss this. Currently, the three steps that we are using for equity for 2018 would be income, communities of color, and renters, because those are vulnerable communities, those three. We did talk about how currently right now we don't have data that actually shows where the disability community lives. And as I talked to the commission, they also talked about how while there's places where people live, it's also where people are moving around the city. And so we really needed the focus to be to make sure that all of the projects that we work on make sure that we address accessibility, not just the ADA requirements, but that we really look at, like, what does accessibility mean on a alternative pedestrian treatment, for example, that there might not be a requirement, but we need to make sure that it is something that will meet the accessibility community's needs.
Okay, that's one of the concerns I have, so I'll want to discuss that
sure.
more. Thank you.
Sure. The second criteria is effectiveness. So to prioritize projects that support connectivity and fill critical gaps in the city's transportation and stormwater infrastructure. So residents on unimproved streets that participated in the focus groups placed a high priority on projects that will make the most positive impact on the transportation and stormwater systems. So effectiveness for transportation emphasizes connectivity, roadways that can serve as safe, ADA-accessible, multimodal connections to neighborhood parks, school, transit, and nearby amenities. And finally, the third criteria is efficiency. To prioritize projects that are consistent with adopted plans, informed by the results of robust community involvement efforts, cognizant of other related improvements occurring in the city, and that make efficient use of limited resources by leveraging other funds. So to sort of make this three-step process make a little more sense with context, we decided we would show you how we would plan to do this for 2018. So this is what the next slide shows you. So what you see on this slide right now is the allocation methodology establishes the long-term guiding principles for project selection. So when you look at number one, which is equity, the shaded areas on this map, the dark gray areas show where the three criteria that I just mentioned. So we use those criteria from the transportation system plan. So that was income, communities of color, and renters And we did this at the block data level, not at the census tract data, because we heard in neighborhood meetings that a lot of times the census tract data waters down, because the areas are too big, it waters down some of the equity, the underserved communities. So we used block data, so it was more granular. The darker areas on the map, the dark gray, show where it has two or three of those equity factors, and the areas that are the lighter colors show where there's either zero or one equity factor. The second, so we took that, and then on top of that, we overlaid.
So before you go on, please.
Sure.
For instance, for the Tryon-Stevens Southwest block, it's really obvious that the most vulnerable people are not in the proposal. I do appreciate you showing the southerly part of Southwest Portland.
Uh-huh.
However, where the plan was done for Tryon-Stevens is not where the highest concentration of the most vulnerable people are.
Actually, when we get to the Tryon-Stevens map, there actually are two segments within Tryon-Stevens in that plan that do meet that criteria. But we can absolutely discuss that more in a minute.
This is actually not necessarily showing efficiency. This is showing where we've got the planning maps, where we've done a study.
Sure. So the first step was equity, and then the second step we used was effectiveness.
I see.
And what we did with the effectiveness is we selected four connectivity factors, so safe routes to schools, bike routes, pedestrian routes, and proximity to transit. So specific metrics for determining stormwater priorities are yet to be determined, awaiting the refinement of new spatial data sets for stormwater infrastructure on residential side streets. So we scored the segments that you see there, 0 to 5, based on the number of effectiveness factors they meet. So for proximity to transit, a street is awarded 1 point if proximate to a non-frequent service transit stop, or 2 points if proximate to a frequent service transit stop. So projects must score a 4 or 5 to be considered. So the darker segments would be the ones that would be considered in this round. And then finally, so once we did the first step and the second step, we still had way more streets than we could ever invest the resources that we have available in. So we had to figure out how can we further narrow the lens of where we can actually look at where we make some of these improvements. So together with the community, PBOT had developed 3 neighborhood street plans, Cully, Division Midway, and Tryon-Stevens, focusing on quiet residential streets. These plans were unique in that they developed strategies for improving local traffic streets rather than arterial streets in single-family neighborhoods. These 3 neighborhood street plan areas have a concentration of unpaved substandard streets. All 3 of these areas contain multiple miles of unimproved residential side streets that are also high priorities for transportation connectivity. So long-term, multiple recurring rounds of capital projects will be selected using a 3-stop methodology. However, for subsequent rounds, the metrics for each step, so the criteria we would use for equity or the criteria we would use for efficiency, would be determined at that point in time, because 10 years from now, we might have a completely different way we're looking at equity than we are today. So we didn't want to become so prescriptive in what specific metrics we would use. We instead wanted to say you have to first start with equity and then move to connectivity and finally to how you would select the projects.
And if you have all 3 of those, is there anticipated to be enough money in the funds to do them all?
So let's. I actually have these maps. We can actually look smaller. So when we look at Cully here, so again, one would be the equity score. So the gray, the darker area there is within the boundary of that Cully plan. That area scored 2 to 3 on equity. And then you can see all the different street segments within there in that area. Again, we have a lot more streets than we could do. So we would then have to further work with PBOT, BES, and the neighborhood to determine which would be the most optimal segments and how much money we had to actually make key improvements. Moving to Division Midway.
Can we move off of that?
Can we go back to Cully for a sec? Mayor has
sure.
a question, then I have a
sure.
question.
So I'm just looking at this map here.
Mm-hmm.
Efficiency is obviously part of the game. How efficient is it to not do an entire area. I assume beyond the orange here, there are a number of unpaved streets that don't meet the other two criteria. Mm-hmm. So you're effectively creating islands in an area that you're rehabilitating. Mm-hmm. How is that effective as a strategy?
Right. So in Cully, I believe there's 15 miles of unimproved streets. So if it's $6 million per mile, right, there's not enough revenue to complete all of the streets. So that's why this approach says, if we look at this network here and then we sit down with PBOT and BES staff and say, where is there a Fix Our Routes project? Where is there a Safe Routes to School funded project? Where are we already making improvements with state routes to school or with stormwater? And are there pieces that we can use these funds to actually connect, like make the connection and complete
right.
a network?
Let me just give you sort of a silly example here.
Sure.
So north of Killingsworth,
mm-hmm.
You have a street that scores high.
Sure.
Except for one block. So under this formula, isn't it possible that you're going to leave that one block there as an outlier?
It depends. You know, the reason that that might not be scored there is because that could be zoned as multi-use or multifamily and not residential, and that's why it wouldn't be
okay, but,
an
but when you're
street.
Doing construction, I'm no
right.
great construction expert, so I could be totally out to lunch here, but it seems to me there's efficiencies and economies to doing the whole area
right.
as opposed to picking and choosing and doing little bits and pieces here and there.
Right.
And I'm concerned that the strategy that you've laid out incentivizes little pieces here and there rather than a comprehensive strategy in an area. Am I wrong?
I think what we're proposing is that we would sit down to actually make sure that we would do exactly what you're saying, make sure that we would make a comprehensive investment so that if that area was identified, the team would sit down and say, what's happening in that area?
Well, in terms of stretching our extremely limited resources,
right.
isn't that the right strategy?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So
right.
we can absolutely emphasize that we would make sure that we would make comprehensive, complete investments on segments.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks. That makes
so
me feel
I have
better.
Two questions.
Sure.
And on Thanksgiving morning, I actually drove the length of Northeast Killingsworth, and my son and I did a community service project, so I'm pretty familiar with this. What's interesting is a lot of the development is happening on Northeast Killingsworth.
Mm-hmm.
There's an elementary school on Northeast Killingsworth. And many of the organizations that we're putting a lot of resources into right now, whether they're Oakleaf, right? The trailer park, Hacienda, Latino Network, and even the Habitat homes are in this stretch. And so, I'm sorry if this is redundant, but are we making sure that as we look to create, to take these unimproved streets, we're also creating safe routes where the kids are able to go from their homes to these various places? Because there's a community center at Hacienda, there's a school, and there's a number of other things. Are we making sure that there's safe routes that are also being contemplated? So it's not just the unimproved streets, it's a whole connected passageway from a home to a school or a community center?
Yes. I would say that because we are using these priorities are based on safe route to school routes and pedestrian and greenways, that we are absolutely looking at where those connections are to make sure that those are the priority in terms of where we would make investments so that we are creating those safe opportunities off of those main arterials into the neighborhoods where the schools are. So, yes, and we can make a note to make sure that we prioritize that as well.
Well, I'm guessing that PBOT wants to see this holistically,
yes.
too.
We're going
to fix some of those unimproved streets, but also make sure there's a safe route for the kids to
get to
the elementary school this way or Hacienda this way.
Sure, absolutely. Let's quickly move on to the Division Midway. I just wanted you to see all three of these. So, again, this is just for 2018. So, once we potentially made the investment in 2018, we would then go back to the drawing board when more funds were available to select another set of areas, which could be based on different sets of metrics and criteria. So as you can see in Division Midway, we have a larger area when it comes to equity, we have a more limited number of streets. But again, there's plenty of streets for the amount of money that we are potentially talking here to be able to make a meaningful investment.
Can I ask a question related to that? And again, it's maybe this is just rehashing the same question I asked earlier, but why not do more in a given area in 1 year and then move on to the next area the subsequent year and move on to the third area the third year?
In the third year?
People have waited 2.5 decades for this anyway. Mm-hmm. Why not be a little more comprehensive in a given area and spread it over 3 years?
Sure. So actually, back to what Commissioner Fritz was asking at the beginning about neighborhood feedback, because we heard loud and clear that people wanted this money to be spent geographically, we were trying to figure out how we could make meaningful investment where there had already been a lot of community involvement. These three plans were in three distinct areas of the city. They were focused on residential streets, and there was clearly need. We could bond $10 million and say for the first 10 years, we're going to do Cully, and then the second 10 years from now, we're going to do Division Midway, and in the third, we'll do Tryon Stevens or some inverse. But that's sort of a 30-year investment.
But what I'm looking at is just the 2018 allocation.
Sure.
I mean, couldn't you just do 1 year in one area, Division Midway, and then the next year go to Cully, and the next year go somewhere else?
I mean, sure. The issue we have is that we could do it in that. I mean, if we're going to. It depends how much money we want to put towards this, right?
You're issuing the bonds up front, correct?
Mm-hmm, and we would identify the projects. So we could either identify $10 million worth of projects in these three areas, or I think what I'm hearing you say is we could focus on one area first.
Mayor, can I just add to that? Because the mayor is suggesting, for this conversation,
sure.
What if we targeted a neighborhood? Because this is a BES-PBOT partnership, there is another potential benefit of doing that that is not apparent from these slides, which is I lead the Bureau of Environmental Services. We have our own list of CIP projects,
right.
And we have our own list of other work we're doing. You know, when you look at Division Midway, this is going to end up being very disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of streets are going to be torn up. There's going to be impact on residential neighbors. Since one of the whole purposes here is linking up PBOT and BES to work more effectively so that we don't come in and disrupt the neighborhood and then the other bureau come in and disrupt it. We do it together. To the mayor's point, if we were directed, if the council, and I'm just saying.
Sure.
If the council said, take Cully and go deeper
sure.
and do that first, then you could direct BES and water to come in and show us all the other lines
sure.
where we're doing capital projects.
Mm-hmm.
And the neighborhood might have a slightly different view if we get it all done in a concentrated way rather than thinning the soup over time. It's just another sure. consideration.
I agree with that. I actually think there's some real logic to that and making sure the pipes go in before the streets.
Right. Yes. Right. Yes, absolutely. And as I said, unfortunately, we don't have the BES maps.
If we are directed
yes.
by council before the next hearing
yep.
to do that, we could take these maps, do our overlay
yep.
of the work we're doing, and then the council could just have that as a data point.
Absolutely.
Where they want to go deeper in one mm-hmm. place
and
potentially be less disruptive by coordinating the
yes.
work.
Yes, and we'd be happy to do that. I want to show you finally just Tryon Stevens, and then we can. I just wanted to be able to sort of give each of these areas. So again, I live in Southwest, so I was actually heartened to see that when you use the block level data, you actually do see meaningful. You see some areas here that do meet our equity score.
Well, you didn't start with the equity score because it's not got the darkest equity. Area in there?
Probably. So again, it's communities of color. It was income and renter.
I know. So on your first slide that you showed, the area that scores a 3 on that is not in the Tryon
right.
Stevens area. So
right.
that's not saying first look is equity.
Well, we said we would do this equity first, then we would lay the streets on top of it, the effectiveness, and then on top of that, we would lay these boundaries to see if within these boundaries, did we still, were there opportunities there? Because if we don't use the boundaries, then we're back to, there's still too many areas.
But that's using efficiency first, and then the effectiveness, mm-hmm. and then the equity score. So that's not what you've proposed.
Right.
I have a suggestion, because I know I'm asking a lot of questions, and I have a
sure.
lot more.
Sure.
And I know people are waiting to testify. We're already over the time allocated for this, so I personally am going to be quiet. I'd like to get to testimony when we can, and then
sure.
Discuss how to move forward.
Sure, absolutely. And I would just say quickly that when you look at that first map and you look at where all the equity, there's many more areas of equity than there are equity scores, than there are both money, and then we're back to doing disparate investment. So that's just what we struggled with. In any advice, support, direction that you can provide, we'd be happy to hear, because it was a hard... It's just hard because we just don't have as many resources. Okay.
Let me just comment on that before you move forward. Because if you were to start with equity, there was only the one area in Southwest that has an equity score of 3. Mm-hmm. That also has the library, Jackson Middle School, Markham Elementary School, mm-hmm. And most two of the mosques in Portland. Mm-hmm. So that's scoring, and plus it's a much smaller area. Mm-hmm. So in response to the mayor's thing, you could actually do most of that. Now, I mm-hmm. have to declare that is my neighbourhood. I no longer walk very much because I'm hardly ever there. But that's, if you start with equity, which is what mm-hmm. you say you are, you would get a different answer than if you actually start with efficiency and go backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Saltzman.
I'm just going to suggest that since clearly this is an issue that's going to take more time than we have budgeted today,
sure.
That we complete the presentation, take the testimony, and then we continue the hearing to sometime in January or February.
Thank you.
And so
the council
sure.
will have more time to
Great.
Deliberate, and we'll have more time to think about the questions you've asked.
Absolutely.
And come back.
Great.
So we're going to quickly move on. This next piece won't take as long. The neighborhood streets framework. So I just talked about the blue. Quickly, I want to talk about the other three components. So grade and gravel. We have here another map. this map represents the 50 miles of dirt and gravel roads that are those LTIC streets. So dirt and gravel streets hinder the quality of local access, property values, and traffic management. At the neighborhood level, these streets are the weak links, the city's local street transportation and stormwater management networks. For our networks, this includes all modes of travel, particularly pedestrians. Good street connectivity, one of the foundation of the city's transportation policy, depends on public rights of way that both exist and are improved. While maintaining the 50 miles of dirt and gravel streets is not a long-term solution, ongoing maintenance requiring grade and gravel on an annual basis will improve local access, safety, and mobility. Staff is planning to develop a maintenance program for ongoing grade and gravel streets and include as a proposal in the development of the 2018-19 budget. The other thing we're going to do is complete a pilot project to validate the application of traffic calming elements and a permanent pedestrian facility while grading and applying gravel to a 10-block section of Southeast Cooper Street in the Brentwood-Darlington neighborhood. This Portland State University capstone project was developed for the Neighborhood Association with participation from neighborhood residents, PBOT, and BES. Moving to neighborhood collectors. Neighborhood collector streets lacking sidewalks are unsafe for pedestrians in many neighborhoods. Many neighborhood collectors are the backbones of our communities. When they don't have pedestrian treatments, they limit mobility and decrease safety. PED-PDX is Portland's citywide pedestrian plan that prioritizes sidewalk and crossing improvements. The plan does identify the key strategies and tools PBOT will use to make Portland a truly great walking city. An incomplete pedestrian network limits the city's ability to absorb growth and meet the livability and access needs of residents, including safe walking access to public transit and essential services. The 1998 Pedestrian Master Plan has served Inner Portland well, but has often struggled to provide adequate guidance for areas such as East Portland and Southwest Portland that present environmental challenges and right-of-way constraints. PBOT is committed to identifying a funding mechanism for neighborhood collector pedestrian enhancements upon council adoption of the PED-PDX plan projected to be completed in winter of 2018. And finally, to LIDs, residential LIDs. The project team did explore the potential for coordination between the LTIC program and efforts to organize local improvement districts to ensure maximum efficiency of public funds for unimproved local residential streets. The team examined 24,000 home sales in the city of Portland over a two-year period. The study found that improving a dirt or gravel road increases property values by an average of $18,000 per home, and that improving an underimproved street to a fully improved street increases property values by an average of $4,100 per home. So the estimated average cost to improve a local street to the traditional standard is currently $30,000 per home. Thus, on average, the value to adjacent homeowners is less than the cost of making the street improvements, which is why we don't see very many LIDs. And when we talk about equity and which communities are the most organized to actually go out and do the LID, we see some barriers there that are worth us looking at to make these more accessible and affordable. So because of the cost of infrastructure improvements has been a barrier to the forming of residential LIDs, PBOT is going to explore financing deferral options for property owners, along with, where appropriate, utilizing the approved alternate street standards, and track the outcome of the proposed Arrow Heights LID that's in the Brentwood-Darlington neighborhood, because that proposal is currently looking at alternate street standards and financing. So now we're done.
Okay.
We're almost done.
Okay.
So I've just covered the three pieces of the presentation. We, of course, ask for your consideration, and I do understand that we're going to not look for approval right now, but to continue direction and invite direction from you as to how we should proceed. I just want to say that this concludes my presentation, and we do have PBOT staff Christine Leon, Rich Eisenhower, Kurt Kruger, Jody Yates, Denver Garda, BES staff Jonas Beery and Ivy Dunlap, along with Tiberius Solutions principal Nick Popanek, just depending on what questions come up. Thank you very much.
Before you guys just have a comment, and that is that this issue has been a problem for 40 years or more, and this is moving the ball forward in a significant way. So thank you. I apologize for asking so many questions.
No.
I appreciate the discussion, and I think we're all ready to continue working on it. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good work. Thank you. How many people do we have testify?
15 signed up.
Oh, boy. Let's try and do it in 2 minutes.
Okay. First three, please come on up, are David Martin, Claire Carter, and Rich Hanna.
Good morning. Would you like to start us off?
Good morning.
Thank you.
Sure. Left to right.
Thanks. And I know some people probably plan their testimony for 3 minutes, so I'm not going to be too hardcore about 2 minutes, but I just want to be cognizant of the number of people who have signed up. Good morning, and thank you for being here.
Okay. My name is Claire Carter. I live at 6156 Southwest Nevada Court, Portland, Oregon. I submitted a letter of testimony, so my oral testimony will be somewhat different, but also quite short, so I hope that it will be the most efficient use of your time. I'm here to testify about the draft ordinance before you that proposes a methodology to allocate fees from the local transportation improvement charge and also to further develop a new program for improving neighborhood streets. I sit on the Development Review Advisory Committee. I'm also a member of the Southwest in Motion Stakeholders Group and have been following the PED-PDX group, which is the Portland Pedestrian Master Plan Update Group, as an observer. As I explained, I've submitted a letter of testimony that explains my perspective. Maybe I can answer a few questions if you have read that letter. But in a nutshell, when the initial proposal for the LTIC fees was presented to DRAC in 2016, the DRAC was in support of the program, since paying the fees was quicker and easier than requesting a sidewalk waiver or waivers of remonstrance and had an assured outcome and generated income for future improvements rather than letting developers pocket the cost of sidewalk construction and walk away. The last presentation to DRAC from PBOT about this program was at the November 16th meeting. At the November meeting, after the presentation, DRAC did not provide direction on either support or opposition to the proposed allocation methodology because it generally is kind of outside the scope of what that group works on, which is making the development process more efficient and quicker. However, I did raise the issue in the group that I think that it's poor public policy.